wherever Ben is, thank you. I'm Steve, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
Through the gift of this program, I've been sober since June 10th of 2004. And I'm very grateful for that, as long as all of you, too, if you knew me back then. You know, I don't know how to follow that. For 35 years, I actively drank. Thanks to this program and the Al-Anon program, Bev and I celebrated 45 years of marriage in August. And I tried to run her off a lot, believe me. I like to say we've been divorced 6 or 7 times, but that's only figuratively, not in real life. I have to tell you, I'm a very important person. I'd like to tell you a little bit about how important I am. Because as we all know, my ego fueled my alcoholism. And it fueled it for 35 years. Bev has told you a little bit of my story, so I'm not going to go into that too much. But she left out some more important details that I'll share with you. But I, as she said, grew up in an alcoholic home. And those of you who grew up in alcoholic homes, you know how I felt. I lived in fear. I lived with embarrassment that my father was an alcoholic. I lived with the feeling that I, in all of my power, would never grow up to be like my father. I did. I grew up with a mother who was an unrecovered Al-Anon. She was absolutely as nutty as my father. I say that in love because I loved them both. My dad died of this disease in 1974, three years after Bev and I got married. I never had an opportunity, one, to tell him how I felt, and two, for him to see my recovery and to make those important amends. My mother passed away last month, with all of the recovery that Bev and I demonstrated, I think to this day she thought that it was still just a matter of willpower for me to conquer this god-awful disease. I was never arrested for DUI. I never lost a wife. I never went through divorce. I was never thrown in prison. So I was just kind of your plain vanilla drunk. And I just kind of went through life functioning the best that I could. But you know, this disease destroyed me in a lot of ways. It destroyed 4 jobs that most people would give their right arm for. I was a controller for a major oil company. I was the number 2 person in Cincinnati Public Schools, having responsibilities for 3,000 to 4,000 employees, billions of dollars of funds, and I was not grateful about the jobs and about the life that my higher power had given me. And alcohol and my alcoholism helped me destroy that. I love those jobs because I was very important in all of those jobs. I was in charge. I was in command of the destiny of those organizations. I was in charge of the money. I was in charge of hiring and firing decisions, and that fueled my ego to the nth degree. But you know, all of that never made me happy. It never made me comfortable. It never got me in a place where I was just neutral. It was either I was real high or I was real low. And how did I deal with that? My friend ate off course. You know, that was the thing that made life manageable. But as we all know, the more I drank, the less manageable my life became. And I finally came to hit my bottom in June of 2004. You know, they say if you don't remember your last drunk, you haven't had it. And I remember that last drunk like it was yesterday. I remember having lost that job, and I'm standing in a bar with my drinking buddy, and something just came over me. It was just this flash, and I know it was my higher power. It was my higher power telling me I've had enough. I don't want to drink anymore. And I was driving down Blanco Road to go home to make this confession to Bev that I was an alcoholic, which she so willingly accepted, as you've heard. And I just said, God, help me. Just three words, just three simple words turned my life. And so I came home and I told her, you know, I'm an alcoholic.
Oh, you think so?
You know, we alcoholics and we Al-Anons, we deal with other, you know, my filter's broken. And so when I said that, you know, it's like somebody tells me to be quiet. I hear, shut the F up. You know? So when I said I'm an alcoholic, you know, she said, oh, you think so? You know, what I heard was, you damn worthless drunk. You know, but that's my filter. That's how I'm broken. And so so she said, yeah, you're a smart guy. You'll figure this out. And so the only place I had to turn was to the minister of our church of Travis Park. We were going to Travis Park Methodist then. And thank goodness we were going to church there, because, you know, that church ministers to the homeless. They minister to the downtrodden, and they minister to the drunks and the addicts. And so that minister knew exactly what to do for me. And he put me in touch with a fellow church member that was a member of Club 12. And I showed up on Saturday morning to my first meeting. And I walked in that Saturday morning meeting at 8 o'clock. And those of you who have been there, you know what it's like. There's laughter. There's friendship. There's hugging. There's true fellowship in that meeting. And, of course, you know, since I'm so important, you know, I still had that judgmental attitude. And I'm looking at these people and I'm thinking, you know, you look like a bunch of old recovered winos. And, you know, boy, you know, but they were happy. They were joyous. They were free. And I thought, I got to have that. I got to feel like that. You know, I saw Lenny in the back. Lenny, you know, you tell that story so well about how in your first meeting you got that little bit of hope. And I got that little bit of hope in that meeting. You all gave it to me. I didn't get that by myself. And that's the we part of this program. Another alcoholic, I go to Turning Point sometimes, another alcoholic up there says, you know, I can't do this by myself. And we can't. We've got to have each other. And so I was just miserable enough to finally listen to people and finally do what you all told me to do. In some cases, I did it kicking and dragging because I'm an important person. But you know, my sponsor told me after about fiddling around with these steps for about 3 or 4 months, I couldn't get to the fourth step, as so many of us have struggled with that. He said, you know, Steve, you don't do your four-fifth step, you're going to drink. And I thought, oh, you're my sponsor. You aren't supposed to get so pissy at me, you know, because I'm an important person. But, you know, I'll give him credit. You know, Kerry B. is my sponsor, and I love him to death because he got me through the steps. You know, since I'm such an important person, I thought my fourth and fifth step was going to be so damn unique. You know, we got through my fifth step, and he said, well, I said, got anything else? And I said, no. He said, well, it wasn't so bad. And I thought, whoa, you talking about? I'm an important person. That's an awful fifth step. And, you know, he helped me start to deflate that ego that I had. And, you know, the other thing I'll share with you early in recovery, and those of you who are so early in recovery, believe me, get involved in the steps, go to meetings, find yourself a sponsor, because you got to have something to replace that booze. If you don't, you'll drink again. And I was in one of those 8 o'clock Saturday morning meetings, and they were announcing that they needed some volunteers to help serve Sunday morning breakfast at the SAM shelter. And Lefty, God rest his soul, came up to me and he said, "Steve, why don't you go with me?" So I met him here at Club 12, and we went downtown, and we served breakfast to the homeless. And you know, Lefty knew that I needed that because I was such an important person. He needed me to see what happens with alcoholism. He needed me to see that if I continued to do that, I would be right there with those people. That I would finally lose the house, lose the family, lose the other job, lose the cars, lose the white picket fence, and lose everything if I didn't practice this program in all aspects of my life. And today, I'll share with you what an important person I am. You know, today I am an important person. But I'm an important person not for me. That's where my ego has been deflated. I'm an important person for everyone whose lives I touch. You know, I lost my last job because I decided to temporarily borrow $100,000. I was going to pay it back, okay? I promise. I was going to pay it back. You know, I love that country western song. Good intentions, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I've been to hell. You know, someone told me the difference between religion and spirituality. Religion are for people who don't want to go to hell. Spirituality is for those who've been to hell and don't want to go back. And I've been to hell and I don't want to go back. And so I had temporarily borrowed that money, and thanks to the board members of that private institution, one of them was a recovering alcoholic. And he talked to me and he said, "You know, we're going to help you through this. You're an alcoholic and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm gonna help you through this." And I'll share with you who he is, because he himself has had his own struggles. And he owns a little basketball team here in San Antonio. And he shared with me what his struggles have been, and he knew if I got in this program like I should, that there was hope for me. And I owe my life to him. I owe my life to all of you. And after I'd lost that job, the chairman of the board said, "You know, I need some talent at my company, and I'm going to give you an opportunity." But he didn't know anything about recovery, and he told me if I drank again, he's going to whip my ass. So I don't know if that's HR correct or not, but I'm glad he told me that. And you know, today I run that company basically, while he goes out and flies his plane and plays golf and takes care of the strategic issues of the company. And you know, it's funny, he trusts me with the money nowadays. That's only because of this program. And I have an opportunity in that job today to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm in charge of HR. Everybody at the company knows that I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I have been able to share that story with those employees on numerous occasions. A lot of them when they get in trouble for DUIs. Some of them when they have family problems. Others when they don't have anywhere to go and they need a way out. I get to share my gift of sobriety with those people. And that is a miracle. That's how important a person I am today, because I get to share my gift with them. I get to share my gift of sobriety with my family. You know, today my children call me when they have a problem. They call me. They don't run to their friends. They don't run to the bottle. They don't run to the joint. They don't run to their in-laws. They run to Bev and I to ask what to do. They now trust me. They know today how much I love them. That's the miracle of this program. That's why I'm an important person, is because I'm important in their lives, not important in my life. I have a gift today, three of them. And I can't do it hardly without crying either, like Bev does. Damn whiny woman. And that's my grandchildren. God gave me those grandchildren as a gift of my sobriety. And those grandchildren love me so much. And I'm such an important person in their life. You know, it's not about me, it's about them. It's about the fact that I get to give myself today rather than get something from them. I just enjoy so much today sharing my sobriety with anybody that'll listen. And it's like Carrie says, you know, and I always mention it to people, Bev and I, as she said, we chair this Wednesday night meeting here at Club 12 we have for over 10 years called The Family Afterwards. It's kind of a funny meeting because it's Al-Anon and alcoholics together. And in 10 years, we haven't had a fight. It's because we stay on our own hula hoop, right? And I must tell you, her and my recovery is today a lot of fun. I can't remember the last time we had an argument. That's because our hula hoops, when they intersect, we don't have a whole lot of intersection. She does her program, I do my program. And most of the time they come together in that Wednesday night meeting. I'll tell you, her favorite line, and I don't know why you didn't use it, Bev, is... you know, in her program, and I experienced this, is she let me lovingly go to hell. And I couldn't have found this program unless she had done that. And today, my life is completely different than it used to be. It's such a joy to get up in the morning and not have that black cloud hanging over my head. That black cloud of despair and the black cloud of resentment and the black cloud of remorse. Today I get up in the morning, generally with a clear mind. I might have something bugging me about work, but that's just work, right? That can be dealt with. But today I wake up with a clear mind knowing that I'm an important person in a lot of other people's lives, and I need to do what's right. And I need to practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in all of my affairs. And I always kid people in the Wednesday night meeting where at the end we say, you know, your only obligation is that of not disclosing the names of members outside this meeting. And I learned that from my sponsor, because he always says, I don't really care. Most of the people I know are glad to see my car out in front of Club 12. I can tell you, I think they're glad to see my car out in front of Club 12, because this is my home. I got sober here. I attend other meetings around the city, but I always come back and I feel an obligation to Club 12 because of you all. I have this life today that I never dreamed I would have, that I never dreamed that I could be so comfortable in my own skin. And I used to, when I was drinking, just used to want to just almost rip my skin apart and rip that god-awful feeling I had out of my body. And I didn't know how to do it until Alcoholics Anonymous showed me how to do that. And so I'll just close with saying, I don't know what. No. I'll close. I've given my story a couple of times, and I've always had note cards. And since, you know, I'm still a lazy damn alcoholic, I didn't dig those note cards out of the bedroom drawer. I just thought, what the hell, I'll wing it. So I hope I haven't bored you all too much. But, you know, Bev and I have a great story to tell. How this alcoholism didn't tear us apart, that it brought us together. That for some reason, she never left me. And I'll tell a little bit of her story. She said God never gave her that direction. She looked to God for that direction, looked to her higher power for that direction. And God never told her, get the hell out. And God, as many times as I tried to run her off, I can tell you, you know, she got those strange phone calls from those strange women. At the end of my drinking, I was hanging out in those sordid places because I thought that's where my friends were. And you know, after I got sober, I've told this many times, those of you who know me, you know, I only got two phone calls from the old friends after I sobered up. One was from a drinking buddy who wanted to borrow money. And I had learned a little bit about Al-Anon, so I didn't help him. Haven't learned much, but I've learned a little. And second phone call was from a waitress in a topless bar wanting to know where in the hell I'd been. That she really liked me, and she wanted me to come by. You know, I don't have any glitter on me anymore. And today I love this club. I love my service work. I know it helps me stay sober. And it helps me to quit thinking I'm such an important person. And you all kind of keep me leveled out, too. You remind me that I'm not that damn important. But you all are important to me. And I thank you for my sobriety.